That's Coach Mike here. That's CoachMike.com. Hey, members of my site, love you guys to death. Listen, been crazy busy in my personal life. I've not done a great job of getting these things up. And although we try and make them timeless, this one is being posted at the time of the coronavirus. So we're all kind of sitting here just waiting to get our kids back on the field. I think you're going to like the podcast. Talked to this coach, Jason Lang, 4 years ago when he was a little bit younger, part of that group of new D2 programs that are sweeping across the Southeast. Really, really like him, man. I first met him, I think, when he was with Coach Klarman, and then he went on to be the head coach at Pfeiffer, and now he's at this new program, Montevello. Love the way he sees what goes on and then adapts his practices to address it. I think you'll enjoy it. This is Lax Coach Mike, laxcoachmike.com. God bless you guys, man, and please, please, stay safe.
Okay. Hey, Lax Coach Mike here, laxcoachmike.com. Man, love you guys to death. Excited about our call today. Have not talked to this well-known coach, at least in the South, man, Jason Lang, now at Montevello. Coach, welcome back to laxcoachmike.com. Been 4 years, I think, man.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been it has been a while. How have things been going?
Hey, listen, yeah, things are going great now that I get to talk to you. For the listeners, you know, right about the time that the D2 stuff really started to take off in the Southeast, Coach was at Mars Hill, and I think as we go through the call, you'll see there was some influence there. And then he was at as an assistant. Then he was a head coach at Pfeiffer, and now he is third year, right, Jason?
Yeah, third year at Montevallo.
Third year at a new D2 program in Alabama by the name of Montevallo. Coach, give us a two-second rundown on Montevallo, where you guys located, and just a little bit about the school.
Yeah, so we're about 30 minutes south of downtown Birmingham. A lot of that depends on the traffic, but, you know, on a good day, you could get to Birmingham 30 to 45 minutes, and then we're about an hour from the international airport on the north side of the city. About 3 hours to 3.5 hours from the greater Atlanta area, and then about 3 hours north of the Gulf Coast. 3 hours south of Nashville, 4 hours east, you know, southeast of Memphis. So, actually, it's a pretty good area to be in for, you know, for Southern lacrosse. You know, we're kind of in the middle of all those, bigger cities where the game, you know, continues to grow. The university itself, it's beautiful. It's actually been voted one of the 20 most beautiful public universities in the United States. Is something we're pretty proud. It's something we're proud of here because there's two other large state schools that are really good at football in our state, and they were not on that list. So the people at Montevallo,
ran programs?
Yeah, right. They tend to hang their hat on that. But, you know, we're one of, I think, 27 or 28 public liberal arts universities in North America. We have over 75 different courses of study, ranging from biology to business, education. It's a good education. There's a lot to choose from. We're a university of about 3,000 students. 2,500 of those students are undergraduates. At least in my experience, it's a bigger Division II than what I've worked at in the past, which is nice. You know, we're only about 12 or 13% student athlete, I'm used to, being on the other end of it where it's like 65, to 70, sometimes 75% student athlete, as a student population. So, it's a great school. It's very affordable. It's an awesome place to work at. So.
Yeah, Coach and I first met, oh my gosh, Coach, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, just kind of casually met, or or talk to each other, or 8 years ago or whatever. And hey, I should ask you this question. We were talking off the air and not like blew it on you. What made this job so attractive to you? I mean, kind of had things going at Pfeiffer.
Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, not going to beat around the bush. You know, Pfeiffer went, you know, made a decision as a university to transition into Division III. Yeah, so for Pfeiffer and you know, for the university, you know, I believe it was the right decision. And there was a lot of things that went into that. And, you know, to be honest, we could probably talk for 2 hours about all the different decisions that were made and why, yeah, you know, that was the best move for Pfeiffer. So, you know,
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so they're in the USA South now, which is it's actually a quite large Division III conference. So, you know, part of the reason for, you know, for looking around was once, you know, Pfeiffer made that jump, there's a 4 year period of no, you know, no shot at the postseason, because of the, there's like a 4 year probationary period.
Right.
You know, just like some of these D1s that have started or jumped from Division II. And I think Merrimack is the only one actually, but, you know, they won't be able to compete for championships for a couple years because there's a, you know, probationary period you have to go through. So, you know, that, and then along with, you know, the recruiting was, you know, was going to have to change drastically. And, you know, we had put, you know, a lot of time and effort into, you know, building those inroads in Canada. And
yeah.
And there's no secret, we had about 15 to 18 Canadians, you know, any given year there at Pfeiffer. So, you know, when the job at Montevallo came open at being D2, you know, having athletic scholarship money, you know, the facilities that, you know, that we had that we do have at Montevallo are fantastic. That, you know, I just thought, you know, it could be a place where, you know, with support, which we have, you know, we'll be able to get it to that level that we had it at Pfeiffer and, you know, eclipse that level. And I truly believe that, you know, we've made some good progress in our first, I guess, 2.5 years. You know, it's a state school. So I think with the, you know, how higher education is trending over the last couple of years, you know, you see more and more schools closing and, you know, yeah, having to do different things to boost enrollment or cut staff or, you know, to keep the doors open. I think being at a public, you know, public university, you know, at this point in time with, you know, the climate of higher ed, I think is not a bad thing. You know,
yeah,
and it's a great area. You know, it's an awesome area. So
I know I've had at least two guys play for you that were my guys. Yeah, you just got a great reputation, really great to the kids. Getting into our stuff, one of the things that struck me about you, when I met you personally, I'm not sure I would have put you in the kind of practice plan, at least the general macro breakdown, you know, that you were running at Pfeiffer. And honestly, I just chalked some of it up to the Carmen Mars Hill, you know, a real conservative practice coach, influence, so on and so forth. But can we run through some of this? And I'm real anxious to hear how you've changed or modified from where you were 4 years ago, Coach. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
You're in a very, very passive, good mood today, man. I'm glad to hear that. Because now I'm going to hammer you, right? I mean, when we talked before.
Bring it on.
Made a really big thing out of the fact that, you know, he was dedicating a ton of time to the stretching at the beginning, like 20 or 30 minutes. I mean, I would die of boredom. But, yeah, let's go through the practice plan real quick. It was a real long period of stretching, then right into some kind of full field passing grill that was, you know, very, very quick and set the pace. And then right into, you know, maybe some kind of full field to get the pace of practice where you wanted it to be. And then you would start to break out into two of the half field sessions with a focus. I think we talked before it was pick play and stuff like that. Is that still pretty much the first 45 minutes or so of practice, Coach?
No, I have changed. It's probably very opposite of that.
That's my boy, you know, Coach. I knew you would come around. I just had to give you a couple of years.
So, you know what, and again, this is stolen and borrowed from, you know, three or four different coaches and kind of, you know, put my own twist on it. But we've started doing this thing that we call pre-practice. And in a sense, it's not really pre-practice. It's the start of practice. But we do a couple of things before we stretch. You know, a lot of that is our stick work, position-specific stick work, our scoring, our shooting drills, you know, on the defensive side, you know, footwork, you know, there's position-specific stick work, and then there are days where they will shoot as well. And then from there, we'll stretch.
And so glad to hear you're coming around, man, letting those poles shoot in pre-practice.
Yeah, it's important. It is important. You know, I think, you know, if you want to play fast and, you know, push the ball, you know, those guys have to be confident with it in their stick. And, you know, they need to be a threat to score, you know, when they're coming down. So, but yeah, so then we'll stretch. And, you know, at least early on in the season, we'll do a full field stick work drill for, you know, for maybe 5 minutes, 7 minutes. And then we'll, you know, we'll kind of get into the, you know, into the flow of practice. And, you know, that will almost always start, you know, with some type of, you know, some type of transition drill, you know, whether it be full field, you know, three-quarter field, whether we, you know, we split the team up into, you know, two stations and we're doing one odd man station, you know, 2v1s or 3v2s at one end or 4v3s or 5v4s at the other end. You know, and then we, you know, we kind of from there, you know, move on into, you know, into doing other things. You know, in the season, it's a little bit more, you know, this is something we didn't do well last week. In this game, you know, we need to create a drill or do something, you know, that we have in our repertoire that the guys know that they can pick up quick so we can work on this. Or this is something that we need to do a bit better job of offensively, so we need to work on this today.
Hey, Jason, give me an example of that. Like, I mean, it doesn't have to be something that actually happened, but give me a specific example so the listeners can get that. Like, you know, maybe against the zone, we weren't reacting this way, or we wanted to overload. I mean, give me a scenario.
Yeah, so
where
I'll kind of start, you know, with a very basic thing. You know, we have a decent amount of Canadians, offensive players, and you know, we were really struggling at, you know, or at least early in our preseason, with, you know, making the correct pass coming out of a dodge where there's either a pick or a mirror. And, you know, the passing options are, you know, you know, we call it like a sidewinder step. You know, you step back and you pull pass and you throw to the pop guy or the mirror guy. You know, if that double comes early and the guy's all over your hands, you know, we teach kind of like a bail step and like throw your hands to the sideline, you know, step away and shovel pass behind you to get rid of the ball. You know, we do encourage our guys in those situations to throw the ball behind the back if that's in their skill set. So we were, you know, really struggling at, you know, practicing these things. And they're not really things that you can practice. Basically, if you practice them without pressure, it's not really, you're not really doing the kids any good. Because, like, I'm left-handed and I can sit there and throw the ball behind my back right-handed with nobody guarding me. I mean, anybody could do that. It's, you know, can you do it under pressure when a guy's trying to get to your hands? So I'm actually good friend with Coach Carrington up at Tusculum, and you know, they were doing, he took something from their soccer coach, like a 3v2, 4v3 keep away drill. So basically what that is, you know, we set cones up about 12 by 12 or 10 by 10 boxes, yard, 10 by 10 or 12 by 12 yard boxes. And we play 3-on-2 in those boxes. And the offense will start with the ball, you know, and we'll do this at 3 or 4 different points on the field. So everybody's getting, you know, a lot of touches and a lot of reps. And, you know, the whistle will blow and the defense is not out until they force an offensive player outside the box where they cause a turnover. And everybody's playing offense. Everybody's playing defense. So, you know, if your three attackmen are grouped together and they want to play offense together, great. And then if they turn it over and you got your two D middies and an LSM playing offense, great. And we just kind of do that for about, you know, 5 to 7 minutes. And it, you know, and we tell the guys, like, we don't yell at them for turning the ball over in that drill. We're not, you know, we're not saying, like, hey, you shouldn't throw behind the back pass, or that's not the correct, you know, we're just letting them play. And, you know, if they have some weird way of getting the ball out of their stick and it gets completed to their teammate, you know, that's great. And then from there, we'll add in, you know, it can get a little stagnant on the outside with guys not moving their feet. So we'll add in, okay, after the first, you know, minute, all right, from now on, every time that you throw a pass, you have to go pick on the ball, or you have to go set a pick away from the ball. And it, you know, it forces the defense to communicate. And, you know, it kind of creates different reads and looks, you know, for the offensive players. So, you know, that's just one example of how, you know, of something we struggled with, and, you know, talking to some other coaches and kind of stealing that drill from Tusculum. But it's something our guys really enjoyed, and I think that they it definitely made us better.
So, Coach, how long would you let that drill run?
So, yeah, so probably, I mean, if they're doing it, you know, if you have the correct number of boxes, you know, in regards to, you know, the ratio of guys at each box, you know, if you do that drill for 5 minutes, you know, and they're doing it correctly, they're pretty, you know, they're pretty tired, pretty gassed after those 5 minutes. Now,
if you're running a 3v2, how long are those five guys in the box?
So until the defense causes a turnover. So, like, the incentive is, right, like, nobody wants to play defense in that drill, right? Like, that's, like, every, like, guys want to have the ball and they want to be playing with the ball. So the incentive on defense is, I'm going to play, you know, as hard as I can and cause a turnover, so I get to play with the ball in my stick. So usually a rep will last 10 to 12 seconds. The longer ones are like 15 to 25 seconds,
okay,
where the offense,
yeah,
is really like banging the ball. And then as soon as the, you know, the player goes outside the box, the ball goes outside the box, or there's a tip pass or a picked off pass,
right,
then,
right,
there's no whistle. The next group of guys, they just go in and they start to drill themselves.
I love that. Love that. Hey, have you seen that drill where you kind of do that at the midfield line, then down at the cage you got an attack and a pull, and you let them play 3v2 in the box for whatever, 8 seconds, 4 seconds, 9 seconds, 12 seconds, and then you yell go, and those five guys run down to where there's an attack. It's a 3v2 in a box down to like a 4v3 at half field.
I've not seen that drill, no.
I'm trying to think. I think originally it was – I think I got it from Toomey, but he called it the night drill because he'd gotten it from Army, K-N-I-G-H-D.
Okay.
And you can run that with your roster. Like the boxes are by the sidelines, right? Same thing, 10 by 10, 12 by 12. And you is in, and you let those guys go, and then bang. You know, you yell go, and no matter where they are, I mean, it's different every time, right? And you're adding an O and a D at the other end into a 4V, and we just keep the O and the D down there for a while. But you can run that, you know, one side going to this cage, they come back up, go to the box on the other side of the midfield line, and then they go the other way. So the whole thing is running like a big oval all the way up and down the field, both sides.
I like it. Yeah, that's awesome. That's something we'll definitely
Yeah, I'll send it to you. It's on my website as the Night Drill, K-N-I-G-H-C. And actually, when we do our top 10 every year, it's one of the most popular drills. It's been up there probably 6 or 7 years, man, but still really, really popular. Coach, you're a pretty smart coach, man. This is a great way to deal with pressure.
Yeah, I don't know how smart I am. I didn't come up with this, but you know, this is something that soccer, you know, at your high school or, you know, if you watch soccer practice or watch them, you know, warm up, you know, this is something that's, you know, they've been doing for, it seems like forever. And they have all these different variations of, you know, number of guys in their, you know, in between their cones. And, you know, it's pretty interesting. So I guess I'm smart enough that I listened to someone else, you know, suggest it and we used it. But I did not come up with it.
Yeah. So you got a catchy name for that one?
We just call it 32 keep away. Or 3v2 keep away.
All right. Not as sexy as the mule drill, but not bad.
Right.
You know, I told you last time we talked, it was a long time ago, man. Coaches are so lousy at really decent names for their stuff, man.
I'm telling you, I fall into that category. I let my assistants, if we come up with a new drill, I give them the first 5 to 10 cracks at naming it, and if I don't like the name, then we just come up with something really simple and not sexy, like 32 keep away.
Hey, believe it or not, we still get a lot of hits on the mule drill on our site.
Really? Good.
Yeah. And, you know, guys wrote in, you know, with a couple of variations too, if I remember right, but, yeah, good stuff. All right. So now we've taken a segment that we needed to work on, right? So where are we?
Yep.
We're roughly an hour, coach, give or take.
Yeah.
And this is where Jason Lang starts to Jones, cause he's not running full field scrimmage. So I bet that's next.
Yeah, so we're, you know, especially in the fall, you know, in the fall, we try to scrimmage or do something full field every day, you know, whether that's, you know, we're facing off and we're playing, you know, we have a couple full field transition drills that we might do. You know, but I think like all the drill work, like the drill work is great and it teaches the little nuances of the game. But I don't think anything is, you know, you can quite, and you can't simulate everything that's going to happen in a lacrosse game, right? So, you know, playing and filming, you know, our full field stuff and then going over that film with our guys, I think is awesome, and it's the way that I think our guys learn the best. You know, we really like to let the guys play and you know, make them learn through playing versus, you know, we're going to do a drill for every single little thing. You know,
yeah.
We want them to play and kind of figure it out on their own. Like, hey, if I don't, get all the way down here as the second slide, they're probably going to score, like they're going to score a goal. Or if I don't, if I go down in transition and I take a poor shot, I better sprint even harder back in on defense or they're going to score a goal, you know? So I don't know if there's a lot of drills that can simulate that kind of stuff. But you know, we're trying to come up with more drills and different drills. So it's not a lot of the same stuff. But at the end, at the end of the day, I think playing full field and having your guys run up and down, especially in the fall, is going to help them become better players.
Well, and, you know, I love, you know, I got a great job, right? I mean, interviewing these NCAA coaches and trying to figure out, you know, what their MO is or what makes this coach different or what separates him. You know, and it's funny, the listeners know, usually when I do a podcast, you know, Alice comes home and she goes, how'd the podcast go? And I'm going, oh, man, it was great. She's going, like, you don't seem very excited, very happy. I'm going, like, whenever I talk to a coach, just like this last example you gave, you know, I'm usually melancholy thinking, God, why wasn't I doing that 3 years ago? It makes so much sense, you know. But you're interesting, you know, because of this mixture. You know, a lot of this stuff is pretty traditional. I can remember in the early days of Lars Tiffany, man, it was 35 or 40 minutes of pool field because you got that from Starja. You know, there was kind of a family tree, if you will, of maybe coaching philosophies. All that's changed now, obviously. Guys are doing new stuff. But my point is, I think ever since I first ran across you, and even last year, 42 shots a game. I mean, here you are at a two-year-old program, right? And you guys are still shooting 40 shots a game. I just think it's fantastic. So, you know, it's coming from somewhere. And I just love that style of lacrosse and love what you're doing to get that done.
Thank you.
So what happens after the full field? Are we going to go back and do some specialty scrimmage or scenario scrimmages? Are we going into 6v6? I was really surprised last time we talked the amount of time you spent on 6v6, honestly.
This is something that I've really I don't know if I've changed or kind of gotten rid of the whole 6v6 offense versus defense, but you know, if you know, like we talked about you know, off the air here, you know, like the amount of touches that your guys are getting in a practice. And I think there's a lot of things that you can cover going 4v4 or even 5v5, but I tend to, you know, to like the 4v4 better. You know, you're involving, even though you're involving less guys, it's quicker. There's more space, which puts more stress on your defense to communicate and to make decisions whether they're going to slide or not and where they're recovering to and how quickly they're doing so. So I think there's a lot of different ways to practice 6v6 concepts with less guys. And, you know, if you think about it, right, if you're going 6v6, you know, and you only have 35 healthy guys, you have four goalies, you know, you want your middies to run together and, you know, your defensive group, like, you know, at that point, it's almost like, well, we should just do it on one side of the field. But if you're going 4v4, you got 30 or 35 guys, you know, you can split that into two fields and your guys are getting more touches. They're playing more. And it's kind of like a hitting conditioner too, right? Like because they're playing more and they're dodging hard and they're having to play defense, you know, they're getting tired. So, I do think practicing 6-on-6 is still, you know, important, like, you know, as far as concepts go and rules of offense and rules of defense. But very rarely are we, at the end of practice saying, all right, you know, let's go 30 minutes, you know, 30 minutes of 6-on-6 today and kind of stop. Now, the two half field thing, which is you know, I got that from Coach Klarman. And I, at the time, I thought it was great. You know, it was, everybody was playing, you know, and I think that's a little different than, you know, your just traditional 6-on-6. Like, we would rotate midfield lines every 10 minutes. You know, they would go from playing with the first offense to coming down and playing against, you know, the second offense. And we would, on the side with the second offense, we would be running, you know, something completely different than what the first offense was running. And it was more of a defensive focused thing. Now we, you know, when we do split into two half fields, we're more so doing part hole drills versus just 6-on-6. So we may be doing 4-on-4s on one side, or, you know, a 1-on-1 variation on the other, or, you know, the dice drill or the Y drill on the other side. And then instead of just switching groups of guys, we'll, you know, after 7 to 10 minutes, we'll switch the whole group, so they're getting different, you know, so everybody's getting coached at the same, you know, at the same thing. So I think that's kind of the difference now, is we don't necessarily go 6v6, two half fields for 45 minutes. You know, it's more of, let's, you know, pick a couple of drills, you know, at the beginning of the week. Like, you know, we'll have a plan in the fall of, this is what we need to accomplish this week. Here are the drills that, you know, we think are going to work. Let's, you know, plan this out so, you know, we can grasp this concept while still playing at the end of practice and, you know, doing all those things.
Yeah, I just think, you know, anything you can do to open up creativity from a practice planning perspective and the coach's creativity, or developing things that best specific examples like you did previously, you know, I just think it's more engaging for the players, man. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, I think in the past, coaches didn't care if their players were engaged or not. I think, you know, successful teams now, and I've been, you know, interviewing coaches for 10 years, you know, everybody except for one, you know, out of 180 podcasts, you know, thought getting the players engaged was huge. You know, and one way you get them engaged is don't do the same thing every day. You can hit the same medals, but you just got to be a little bit more creative in the way you do them. Are you integrating your man up, man down into the practice routine now, Coach, or are you still doing that after practice?
So, you know, we do, you know, we kind of mix it up. You know, I think, you know, I've tried the, you know, at the end of practice, you know, we're going to, you know, man down's going to go with, you know, my assistant for 10 minutes, and then the man up's going to come with me for 10 minutes. We're going to talk through our points, and we're going to run through everything, and then we're going to go live for, you know, 5 or 6 minutes. You know, we've kind of gone away from that and, you know, do man up. We call them like man up, man down challenge, where in the middle of practice, you know, we'll have a, you know, a minute or a 30-second penalty after a drill. All right, man up, man down challenge. You know, pick who you think's going to win if you're not in, and, you know, whoever wins, the other, you know, the other team has to, you know, do push-ups or do a sprint or something like that.
Right.
You know, that I do like that because it puts the kids on the spot. You know, they have to perform, but there's not a lot of coaching going on in that. It's like, you know, we literally will have like 2 or 3 minutes for that segment of practice, and once the man up, man down's done, we're right on to the next drill. You know, something I took from the Drexel staff, they spoke at the convention this year, is keeping, you know, keeping the man up group, you know, a couple days a week after practice. And not for long, like 10, maybe 15 minutes, and just putting them through, you know, a couple drills at the end of practice, like, you know, getting touches and skip passes and, you know, running through your sets and what, you know, what you're looking for, just to keep their minds fresh. So, you know, this season, we really went kind of back to doing it at the end of practice. Our defense was a little bit younger. We ended up starting, a freshman, a sophomore, and two sophomores. And then our LSM's a sophomore. Second LSM's a freshman. So we're a little bit younger defensively. And I think that, going at the end of practice was good for those guys because, my assistant was able to, coach them if they made a mistake or things didn't go, the way they wanted them to. And it wasn't like, okay, we got to, it's all right, next drill. Like, I think our defense needed that extra, needed extra coaching, if you will.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. You still hang with the 3-3 offensively, coach?
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, my man up philosophy, I think, changes every 5 minutes. When I was, working for, so my first 2 years as an assistant at Marcel, I worked for Sean Woods, who's he's the head coach at Colorado College. And we had,
out there, Scott Poplar, is a really close friend of mine.
Okay. So my first year, with Coach Woods, I think we had the best man up in the country.
He's good.
It was like something like
he's a good player.
65. Yeah, he's awesome. Something like 65 or 66%. And then the next year we had the best man down in the country. So like with his man up, he had like 3 or 4 plays, and then if those didn't work, it was like the guys would kind of just get into a set and just play. So we kind of did that at Pfeiffer a little bit, when I first got to Montevallo with, 37 freshmen out of 38 in year one, it's like, all right, we can't really just let these guys play. We have to.
You got a total IQ of 37 in between 6 offensive guys.
Right. And so like, we really, we're like, okay, this is the play we're going to run. If it's not there, this is what we're going to do. And we gave them like 1 or 2 options out of that. And I think we only had like 2 or 3 plays the whole season. Last season it was, we gave them a little bit more freedom. And then again, I took a lot from that the talk from, I think it was Coach Boyle at Drexel over at the convention in December. And he's talking about being multiple and having different looks for different opponents, because everyone's got film now on you. So, our goal going into the first, first half of the season was, to have a new man up look, not necessarily play, but a new man up look every game. We were at least going to have 1 or 2 things that we had not done on film, that we were prepared to use, and then. It's funny, like, right, we got stopped right at the halfway point. So we were now looking at, doing some different things as far as, less plays, more changing sets, and giving the guys a little bit more freedom to just kind of play out of some certain sets. So I don't know if that was going to work, but, as a coach, it's, you want to have so much control, over the special teams. But I think, letting the guys go and kind of just play and kind of feel things out, I think can probably be more beneficial if they're able to handle it, like if they have the lacrosse IQ to handle it, and understanding that, my hands free at 15, is not a good shot. Like, there's a reason your hands are free at 15. Like, nobody's going to come to you because, you probably can't score from out there. So let's pass the ball and try to get our hands free from 5. But, understanding, those basic concepts and, sharing the ball and working for the best shot, I think are good things and things that, you know, if your guys can handle, I think it's the way to go. But, you know, they got to prove to you that they can handle it before you kind of let them go. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know me pretty well. I mean, lacrosse-wise, I mean, personally, I just, you know, we run 80% of our practices in transition. Our man up is basically, let's figure out where we can exploit a 2v1 on the backside and make it happen.
Right. Yep.
You know,
I tell my guys all the time.
Not a lot of overcoaching. You know,
right.
Other than that. We started running more open set umbrella on man up. Not really a 3-3. Had a guy at X, you know, for a large part of it. Just to redirect strong to weak, weak to strong. But, you know, I found a lot of coaches that messed them up. You know, if they couldn't slide off the crease or even slide coma, you know, in a man-up scenario, I don't see that formation a lot, but we play around with it a lot. Just an umbrella on man-up.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's something that, you know, you normally don't see. And, you know, it puts pressure on those pipe defensemen. You know, are you going to, you know, if you get over-rotated, are you going to come up off the pipe and try to get across? Or, you know, how, you know, it makes the defense make a choice. And usually, you know, when at least in, you know, odd man situation, when you make the defense choose, you know, you're going to have the other option, right? So I think that's
The other big thing, the other thing that, you know, you learn in coaching, you may talk about it when you're an inexperienced coach, but I think the longer you're around, the more you realize that, and I say all the time, I mean, you know, players got to make plays, you know, and at the end of the day, you know, one of the things I learned from Danny Sheehan at Lemoyne many years ago in a podcast that never left me was, you know, you got to figure out what you got, you know, and if you got a right post-up shooter that can't carry the ball 5 feet, but he's money when he touches it, if you can get him in that 10-yard space, you know, whether it's high to high, low to low, I mean, he's got all the stuff, right? He can do a lot of different things shooting. He's not just a one-trick pony on a shot. If I got that, I love that set for that too, for the point you just said. A lot of times I can get that guy creeped up after two or three passes back and forth. It almost looks like a high school man up, you know. But you got to
figure out. Yeah, I mean, I don't care what it looks like, as long as, you know, if it's producing goals. And I mean, you can look at some of the great, you know, Division II teams in the South, you know, over the last 8 to 10 years. I mean, you know, those limestone teams that, you know, when they won.
So
I don't know.
That's just what was running through my head when you said that.
Yeah, like, you know, they were, at times, they would just run basic, you know, motion, dodgy alley, throw the ball to the backside, pop the crease out, offense, and they would run it to death. And if you weren't able to defend, you know, four alley dodges and slide and recover in a row, they were going to score. And I think sometimes, you know, as coaches, we can get a little too, we can out-coach ourselves a little bit. And, you know, if you have big athletes that can run and get downhill and or get to the middle of the field, and, you know, maybe a simpler offense is better, because, you know, they're not thinking, they're just playing. And I think that's, you know, sometimes simpler is better, I guess.
You know, it's funny you said that. In all the years we've been doing this, man, there's some great quotes out there, as you can imagine, all your buddies. And I was talking to Bevel at Cortland one year, and the man down was 1-1-1, Jason. 1 out of 10 teams were scoring against him on his man down. And I said, Coach,
wow.
Without being too proprietary, man, what are you doing in practice? I mean, what are the points you're really reinforcing, you know? And there's like silence on the other end of the phone for like 10 seconds, seems like 30 years, right? And he goes, well, you know, what we find is usually there's two scorers on a man-up team. We cover those guys.
That's a good point. I mean,
He goes, yeah, we try. We're not real fancy. We try and identify the scorer, and we try and take those guys away. And what else you want to talk about, Mike? I mean, yeah, I was like, okay, all good. Way to go, Bev. Way to go, Bev. You know. Hey, man. Yeah, we're coming up on it. One thing I do want to make sure that we get out there is I'm not sure why, and maybe you have an opinion. It just seems like, you know, some of the predominant growth in lacrosse is, you know, D2, and it's in the southeast part of the United States, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, for our kids down here in, you know, Alabama, Georgia, more lacrosse on the Gulf Coast now, you know, Montgomery's starting to get lacrosse, all the areas, you know, in Alabama, outside of Birmingham. Yeah, it just provides great avenues for those guys. And I'm just not sure why. You have any theory on why D2 is growing in the southeast?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think first and foremost, you know, it's, you know, again, it's kind of a bigger issue, but you know, with higher education and you know a lot of these schools that are adding the sport are you know smaller private schools, and you know lacrosse is not a sport where every kid that's on the team gets a full ride. You know, at the D2 level, the maximum amount of scholarships any team can have is 10.8. You know, if you have a roster of 40 guys, 45 guys, you know, you're splitting that up. If they give you the full 10.8, if the institution gives you the full 10.8, and I think it's, you know, it's heads and beds. You know, I think these administrators, you know, see that, well, if Montevallo and Alabama can have 40 guys on a lacrosse team, you know, why can't we do this outside of Memphis or outside of Nashville? Or if Birmingham Southern, you know, they were probably the first, you know, they were one of the first teams, them and Huntington at the Division III level to, have lacrosse down here in Alabama. You know, if those coaches,
yeah, I think
in
actually,
those schools,
I think, yeah, Birmingham Southern probably had lacrosse 6 or 7 years before Huntington even.
Yeah. So, you know, again, I think as far as, you know, the universities and the colleges at the D2 level, I think it's, you know, as long as there's, you know, no Title IX issues, you know, especially some of these schools that don't have football. You know, I know Huntington and BSC both have football, but, you know, we don't have football. UAH, Alabama Huntsville, who's in our conference, they don't have football. Young Harris in our conference doesn't have football. You know, so I think for a lot of these schools that don't have football, it's like, well, we can get, you know, in 2 or 3 years, we'll have consistently 40 more guys, 35 to 45 more guys on campus. That, you know, this is a no-brainer.
Well, and I think,
you know,
it's
but
an enrollment too, right? I mean,
yeah, enrollment. Yeah, exactly.
Nobody's going to go to Monticello from Canada unless they're going to play lacrosse.
Right. But, you know, at the other hand, too, I think, you know, at the high school level, you know, the growth is, you know, is the growth at the youth and high school level is also pushing the growth at the college level. You know, I think with the more teams or the more states, I guess, that sanction the sport as a state sport, you know, I've heard that Tennessee, you know, will be having a vote this spring to sanction it in 2021 as a state-sponsored sport. Obviously, Georgia is state-sponsored, Florida is state-sponsored. Alabama's not yet, but there's a lot of positive.
That's another dialogue for another day, man. I'm not sure that's always a good thing, but, yeah. Hey, listen, man, I want to be respectful of your time. We try and keep these timeless, you know, so I really don't talk about a lot of stuff. Coach and I are in the middle of the stay-at-home coronavirus period here. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty and everything else. But one of the things I do want to get on the map, though, is prospect days at Montevallo, Coach.
Yeah.
Standing point, kind of up in the air now. Can you give me a, or give our listeners just a general premise on what your thoughts are on the prospect days? Obviously, I've had players go to your prospect days. And I'm a big fan of yours. But, I mean, you thinking about trying to do something in the fall, or have you gotten that far in 2020?
Yeah, so we usually traditionally, and I say traditionally, only 2 years of prospect days here, but we're usually on the Saturday of Labor Day weekend. So coming up, and that'd be September 5th, 2020. Now, we haven't had those dates approved yet by our administration, because we're still kind of, you know, in limbo here. So, you know, we would hopefully, if we're able to, have it on September 5th. And I love the prospect days. You know, I think they're great. They're great for the parents, great for the kids, and, you know, it really gives you insight into the program and being able to be coached by that coaching staff. So
Jason, I think that was before some kind of unique URL, though, wasn't it? I had it in my notes. What did I do with it? MontebelloCamps.org or camp. I mean, there was a weird. I'll have it on my website, but I mean, how do they get to that?
Yeah, it's MontebelloSportsCamps.com. And then, you know, all of our sports are listed there. So you just click on men's lacrosse, and you know, once the site is live and we have the dates finalized, you know, we will you'll be able to register and get signed up.
Awesome, man. Hey, we had a little technical difficulties getting this call recorded at the beginning, and Coach hung in there with me, and we got it worked out and got some good drills here. I just love the way you reacted to the you know, not handling the ball as well as we possibly could under pressure, and how you did those little box drills. I'm going to spend a little more time writing that up, but anyway, man, I'm just so thankful you came back on. And now that you've modified your practice plans a little bit out of the Klarman 6v6 for an hour and a half, we might have you on sooner than 4 years, man.
Okay, great. Great. I'll be looking forward to it.
Coach, if you expect to be back on in 2 years, you're going to have to laugh at my jokes a little bit more than that.
Gotcha.
All right. Hey, Coach, stay on the line with me here. Again, great call, man. Slacks Coach Mike, LaxCoachMike.com. Special thanks to this great young coach, Jason Lang, and wishes for great success at Montevallo. Remember, you got an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it seriously every day. Work on your practice plans, man, and let's just make sure the kids have a blast and learn to love lacrosse. Again, this is the Lax Coach Mike. Stay on with me, Coach. LaxCoachMike.com. Until next time, everybody.